There was a strong Quaker presence in the Washington County from the time of its first white settlement at the beginning of the 19th century. The Quaker faith, a Protestant sect of the Christian religion, was based upon a belief system of virtue, peace, and equality, and Quakers are generally known for being pacifist and extremely temperate. This disposition would later count a strong Quaker presence among abolitionist efforts in the United States. The largest influence of Quakers in Washington County occurred from 1815-1816, likely because of a series of treaties between American citizens and Native Americans, making the area safer for potential settlement. Many Quakers moved to the Indiana Territory from southern states due to their disagreement with an institution of slavery. A Quaker individual of particular note in Washington County, Matthew Coffin, immigrated to the area in 1810. Matthew will now share his story with you.
I was born in the south of the American colonies in 1754, but I later grew greatly discontented with living among a society that posed the injustices of slavery upon innocent individuals. So I decided to move my family into the Indiana Territory, where slavery had not yet had a chance to fester. We settled in Section 9 in the northeast of Salem, where I built the first tannery in the county. It was a two-story brick building, and it actually operated up until the year 1860, when a great storm destroyed it. Now, although I ran and operated the tannery, though, I was actually a watchmaker by profession, and I had a great interest in lecturing over the potential of electricity to be used as a power source, and to date many other electricians of the age, such as Samuel Morse. In alignment with my faith, I was also very involved in the Salem Peace Society, which officially operated from 1818 to 1826. Indeed, I believe so strongly in the efforts of the society that I served as a trustee for the organization. The purpose of our society was to advocate for peace over war. Even though there were no imminent threats of conflict or war at the time of our society's founding, however, we felt that it was important to create a peaceful atmosphere in which the beginnings of conflict could be overcome in order to avoid later tragedy. In January of 1818, there was a call out in one of our county newspapers for all those who favored peace over war in the county to assemble at the county seat to organize an organization for the advocacy of peace. Later that month, I was among the 57 men, ranging in age from 21 to 60, who gathered at the new courthouse in Salem to organize the society. Men involved in our society were not only religious leaders, but merchants, educators, and businessmen. Many influential men in our community supported our movement, including William Lindley, who was largely responsible for the founding of Salem, Zachariah and Joseph Nixon, who were the first two landowners in our town, and Ebenezer Patrick and B.B. Booth, who founded our first paper and were also successful in other enterprises. At our initial meeting, we elected the leaders of our society and ordered 200 copies of our newly composed constitution to be printed and distributed. We agreed to move our subsequent meetings to the Blue River Meeting House, which was built upon land that I actually donated for the general use of the public. Well, at our next meeting in February, our newly elected President B.B. Booth delivered an inspiring address against the atrocities of war, coupled with the undeniable benefit of universal peace. He reviewed the ravages and desolation that at that time had been recently wrought by the Napoleonic Wars in Europe, and hoped that the world would never again see such destruction of life and property. He demonstrated that this had slowed world progress for years to come. He followed this indictment by urging each of us present to spread the gospel of universal peace to the fullest of each of our potential so that the greatest good might be accomplished. We actively collected and distributed literature that advocated these sentiments. For the first 5 years of the organization's existence, our meetings were held quarterly. However, in 1821, we decided to instead only hold an annual meeting. By this time, interest was waning in our organization, and it was becoming difficult to acquire funds to continue our purpose. By the summer of 1826, the Salem Peace Society had dissolved. I died just 6 years later on May 22nd of 1832 of an early outbreak of the cholera that would ravage Salem in 1833. My gravestone still stands at the Blue River Hicksite Meeting House Cemetery, about 7 miles northwest of Salem. I died at 78 years of age. The legacy of striving toward universal harmony and peace was continued in my family, though, particularly by my nephew Levi Coffin. Although Levi never resided in Washington County, he visited us in Salem several times throughout my life. He was a largely influential member of the Underground Railroad and had an intricate knowledge of the many routes and stops along the system. It's estimated that he and his wife, Catherine, helped almost 2,000 men, women, and children escape to freedom, leading many of them to refer to him as the unofficial president of the Underground Railroad.
The Underground Railroad was an enormous and ambiguous organization in the 19th century that served to rescue slaves from the south of the United States into the northern states, where slavery was mostly illegal. It also helped to keep former slaves in the north from being sold back into slavery in the south. The overall endeavor acted in direct violation of both northern and southern laws, meaning that the entirety of this mission had to be carried out in utmost secrecy. Willing participants helped to secretly transfer slaves from house to house, sometimes dwelling in caves, barns, and other locations as well. The Underground Railroad had no clear beginning and ended only when slavery was abolished. No one knew where it started or where it ended, and the organization had no officials or officers to speak of, so to this day it is not known who started the endeavor. Due to the secretive nature of the organization, only a select few individuals are documented as officially being involved in its purposes, with Levi Coffin serving as a notable example. As stated by Matthew Coffin before, Levi never actually resided in Washington County, but his relation to Matthew Coffin creates an interesting connection to our community.
I was born on a farm in North Carolina in the year 1798. The only son amongst seven children. My sisters and I, raised by our parents, Levi Coffin Sr. and Prudence Williams Coffin, as Quakers. I believe that it was my early upbringing that later contributed so greatly to my opposition to the institution of slavery. I can still vividly recall my awakening to the injustice of slavery. I was merely a boy of 7 years, helping my father chop wood by the side of the road when a group of dark-skinned men were led past us, chained and handcuffed together. As the men were led away to be sold in Georgia, Alabama, and Louisiana, as I later discovered, I was struck with a deep sadness at the thought of what it would be like for my father to be taken away from my family in such a cruel and inhumane manner. This feeling of sadness was replaced with an intense hatred for opposition and injustice in any form, even if I did not at the time fully understand the overarching political implications of my thoughts. In 1824, I married my wife, Catherine, and in 1826, we moved to Newport, Indiana, where I became a successful merchant. More importantly, though, this is where I began my involvement in the Underground Railroad. Annually, my wife and I saw about 100 individuals into our simple 8-room house on their journeys along the Cincinnati, Madison, and Jeffersonville routes of the Underground Railroad. I would invite them, in a low tone, to come in, and they would follow me into the darkened house without a word, for we knew not who might be watching and listening. Once they were inside, my wife and I made them comfortable with food and clothing, much of which I convinced my gracious neighbors to donate over the 20 years my house operated as the so-called Grand Central Station of the Underground Railroad. My local success as a merchant not only allowed me to contribute many of my own funds to sustain the operation, but it also served to deflect opposition to my illegal activities from pro-slavery supporters and slave hunters in the area. Throughout the years, many asked me why I continued to help slaves to freedom, even though it could lead to my own arrest. I always told them that I read in the Bible when I was a boy that it was right to take in the stranger and administer to those in distress, and that I thought it was always safe to do right. The Bible, in bidding us to feed the hungry and clothe the naked, said nothing about color, and I should try to follow out the teachings of that good book. One young lady to take refuge in our home was later immortalized as the character of Eliza in Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe. And I have been told that Simeon and Rachel Halliday in the novel are representations of my wife and myself. In 1847, Catherine and I moved to Cincinnati, where I opened a wholesale warehouse that handled cotton goods, sugar, and spices produced exclusively by the labor of free persons. This enterprise was actually funded by the Quaker Convention of 1846, held in my Uncle Matthew's town of Salem, Indiana. Although my uncle passed away before I became very involved in the Underground Railroad, I believe that he would have been enthusiastically supportive of my efforts to contribute to personal freedom, and I think that he would have assisted the network of routes in Salem. Regardless, though, I am grateful for the support I received from my Quaker brethren in Salem. In addition to operating the warehouse, Catherine and I continued our efforts of assisting individuals on their journeys to freedom while living in Ohio. In 1867, I served as a delegate to the International Anti-Slavery Conference in Paris, and I also served as a leading figure in the Western Freedmen's Aid Society, which helped to educate and otherwise provide for former slaves. I died on September 16, 1877, at the ripe old age of 79, and I am buried along with Catherine at Spring Grove Cemetery in Cincinnati.